Good evening, all. It's Deborah Krasniansky here from Adayat. I'm doing this call with Freda Kaplan, who's a certified garment educator of bringing a baby home. And tonight's topic is preparing your marriage for a baby. So, Freda, let's just jump right in. What does that mean, preparing your marriage for a baby?
So it's actually very interesting that if you look around you, in most places you'll see all kinds of different workshops and information sessions for either expecting or new parents. You'll see things like hospital tours, obviously. There are information sessions for learning how to install your car seat and amazing, amazing, excellent workshops about parenting techniques. But you really don't see at all, not even an offering of workshops or even an awareness about the importance of preparing your relationship for the baby, for the new baby, for everything that comes along with the new baby. And it's extremely, extremely important. And actually, possibly the greatest gift that you can prepare for your baby, more important than any baby stroller you'll buy or the top-of-the-line car seat, is giving that baby a home with the most warm and loving relationship between the parents. Nothing else will affect the baby in a more positive way than that.
Okay. So when we're talking about the taking care of the baby and the marriage relationship, a lot is going to be changing. And what would it take to take care of this marriage part, not the baby, because like you said, there's a lot out there on that.
So it's what's so interesting about bringing home a new baby, and especially, you know, for the first time, you know, for the first baby, and actually, even though, you know, nothing compares to the changes that come along with the first baby, but really also, you know, the first baby, the second baby, there's still that sense of change of, wow, we really feel new in this. So really, you know, the first baby, the first, possibly even the third baby, that there's still that feeling of, wow, we really have to learn the ropes over here. And one of the very interesting things is that no matter how much, you know, you could have somebody who grew up in a family with many babies, you know, while they were a teenager, so they were exposed to everything that comes along with bringing a baby home, or they themselves, you know, spend a lot of time babysitting other babies, or they might have even spoken a lot about it while they were dating or obviously while they were pregnant, expecting the baby and how things are going to be. Obviously, there's nothing like the actual moment and the feelings that it brings. And there's so many things that people don't realize that they need to talk about. And there's so many things that people don't realize they might have differences between them. So, for example, you could have a couple that meets while they're dating. So it's actually a very interesting, I would say, journey that a young couple goes on. So they start out as being single, and when they're single, they really start out as only thinking about themselves. You know, when a single person meets someone else, they're thinking, is this the right person for me? And once they commit and decide this is exactly what I want or this is something that I would like to work on, then they are able to get engaged. And then all of a sudden it becomes we. So it's no longer I'm only thinking about myself. It's we. How do we want to set up our house? Where do we want to live? What do we want to do with our life? And then all of a sudden there's that new stage where it's actually not only about the couple. It's not only about themselves. There's going to be someone else who's completely dependent on them for the next 20 years, let's say. And the nature of the couple's relationship will have a tremendous, tremendous impact on this person, this little baby that's going to be born. So, and it all happens in a very short time. That's really the challenge over here, that, you know, in many cases, Baruch Hashem, that, you know, a young couple could go from meeting each other, you know, at the time when they're in Shidduchim, to literally actually having a baby in the course of a year. So it's really a very, very short time to go from that stage where a person is thinking about themselves and what's right for me to all of a sudden thinking about, wow, there's another little person that their life is literally dependent
not only on me, but on we. And I have to make, it's not just about how I'm feeling right now. I have to also worry, you know, if the other person, the other spouse is not so happy and the other spouse is going through a difficult time, then even if I feel like everything's okay and it's not smooth sailing for the other person, it's going to affect that baby. And I need to take care of it. It's us now for the baby.
So, Freda, I mean, of course, taking care of a baby takes a lot of energy. And taking care of the marriage relationship and thinking about the spouse also takes energy. How do you work out that balance of where to put your energy? And we're talking now to men and to women. I mean, of course, many times it's the mother who takes more care of the baby, but either way, you have to take care of your spouse as well. So let's talk a little bit about that balance.
So balance is, that's a great question, you know, the idea of balance, because, you know, I think, again, many people, usually the type of support that comes in, and Baruch Hashem, there is, most couples do have a lot of support to rely on from family members, from neighbors. There are amazing organizations that offer breakfast for new mothers, supper for new mothers, funds for cleaning help. There is really all this type of infrastructure that Baruch Hashem is in place, and a couple is able to rely on those resources if they need it. And these are obviously tremendously, tremendously helpful, and a couple should definitely tap in to these resources. But really the question is, when you're talking about balance, is that going to be enough? And I think a very good question that, you know, the couple, and what's important here is that the journey be as a couple, that it shouldn't be either of them is feeling, you know, I gave birth. Let's say, for example, the woman might feel like that. I gave birth, and I have to go through this process, and he doesn't understand me, or he might be feeling, you know, I didn't give birth, and I'm feeling, you know, a little bit overwhelmed that all of a sudden, you know, there's a baby here in the house, and the finances, and all of those kind of things, that the stresses that might come along with it. It's not about me. It's not about each one individually. It's about the couple together. So that's very important, that we're talking about the couple together looking for that balance. And the balance, when we talk about the balance, the question is, what will be the defining factor? So if you look at most couples who do have difficulty, and the statistics are actually astounding, you know, that Gottman, he did make research on this exact topic, you know, working with young new families, and he found that 2/3 of couples, which is obviously a tremendous, tremendous number, experience a decrease in their relationship satisfaction after a baby is born. And that's very difficult, you know, so where each one, it doesn't matter which one it is, sometimes it could be both of them experiencing the decrease in satisfaction, sometimes it could be one of them, maybe the other one is tuned out, they don't even notice, there are many different reasons, but if there's this decrease in the relationship satisfaction, then the couple should not freak out and say, you know, there's something wrong with the marriage. We're not, you know, there's something wrong with our relationship. No, it's actually, it's very normal. This is a very, very big, tremendous change and in the couple's life, and they have to prepare for it. They have to deal with it. And the balance, when they're looking for it, so what will be the defining factor? Will it be the cleaning help? Will it be the meals? Is that what's going to help us keep the balance? And when you look, you can see that for most couples, or for many couples that experience this decrease in relationship satisfaction, there are the meals in place, and there is the cleaning help in place, and there are family members and friends and neighbors coming over to help the mother take care of the baby and give her a few extra hours. And still, you have that feeling of, wow, we feel like our relationship is not like what it used to be. So in most cases, the cleaning help and the extra help with food and the extra help with the baby are not enough of a defining factor to help the couple feel like their relationship is not affected, and to basically deal with the resentment that might come along with that feeling. And obviously, what could very possible, and that's very important for a couple to keep in mind, that God forbid the decrease in satisfaction could be so bad for certain spouses that they might actually grow to resent the baby. That is something that can happen. So it's very important. So the balance we're looking at is a state of mind, meaning if everything is perfect, you know, it could be that you walk into the house and you see everything is clean. The freezer is stacked with meals for the next 2 months. You know, the young neighbor or the young aunt is coming over every day for 2 hours in the afternoon to hold the baby. You think that from the outside it looks like everything is perfect, but if one of them or both of them have this state of mind, no, it's not okay. I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling unappreciated. I'm feeling resentful. Then all of those other things won't help. So that's very, very important. There has to be an open communication. The couple has to learn to have those conversations that allow them to enter the state of mind where they won't feel that resentment, that neither of them will have that feeling of, I'm not happy, I'm overwhelmed, things are just, I'll never be the same again. All of these feelings are very real feelings, and they can be very, very painful to live with.
And we're not even talking about postpartum, which is something that people can reach out for, which is common enough and easy enough to work through if you reach out to the right support. So that's a separate topic, and at the end we can talk about what resources are available for that.
That's a great point. It's not postpartum depression. It's that even though, and again, it's not even necessarily a reflection of reality. The other spouse might be tremendously appreciative of the other one, but if it's not being spoken out loud and the other person feels that they're not being appreciated, and again, it could be either one of them, then you're going to have that feeling, that painful feeling, and that's associated with the new baby, and it's hopefully not something that either of them has to live with.
So how might, you said something about communicating and like sharing what's going on for you. How would you start the conversation, especially like there's so much new happening, like you said, it might even be still a new marriage. So what are some ways to start that conversation, to share what's going on for you, which would be a little bit different than to ask the other what's going on for you. But let's start from one side of sharing what's going on for yourself.
So the first thing that I would say that the couple would have to, before they start such a conversation, is really to, and obviously the best thing is if they can already start having these conversations before they have the baby, so that it becomes, and not, it's not enough to have these conversations just once, because as the baby grows and different things happen, you know, literally from day to day, that things can change. So the way one of the spouses felt one day could actually be different the next day. And, which is obviously extremely common, especially for a woman who just had a baby, that the way she feels one day, her husband might ask her how she feels, and she might actually feel really great and, you know, that's not overwhelmed and very appreciated. And then the next day she might feel the complete opposite, and that's very, very normal. So we will talk about it later, a very important, if I could say, ritual that a couple could adopt every single day, hopefully, but if not at least a few times a week, about a daily stress-reducing conversation. But besides the daily stress-reducing conversation, so what you mentioned about having a conversation, and obviously the goal is that what we're looking for is that both of them, we're trying to learn the whole idea, if we're looking at the statistics of the two-thirds who experience a decrease in relationship satisfaction, we're looking at the one-third that don't experience that decrease, and we're looking at what goes on between those couples that the other two-thirds can learn from. So really what we're talking about is, number one, taking away any sort of criticism, any sort of contempt, any sort of blame, any feelings like that, which people might be familiar with, that Gottman refers to them as the four horsemen, that are essentially really toxic to our relationship. are obviously not something that should be used anytime in any conversation at any point in a marriage, but the idea that at such a sensitive time, there's the real, real stresses and the real, real changes that come along with the new baby should be extra sensitive. So first of all, I would definitely say that the couple should actually practice and say, you know, both of us, and to have that conversation, to say, I know both of us, it's so hard now, and there's so many new changes, and there's so many stresses, and, you know, either of us might be feeling overwhelmed, and it's so important for us to talk. So let's try to avoid any type of criticism and any type of, and this has been spoken about. You can go to many, many, you know, talks on marriage and relationships, and this is spoken about a lot, the idea of always making the question and everything you have to say in the I, you know, so I'm feeling overwhelmed, and I'm feeling unappreciated, and I'm feeling like this is too much for me. I'm feeling like I'll never get back to myself, instead of you don't do enough, and you completely changed since the baby was born, or any of those things, any type of accusations are not going to help the couple at all. And but the main point is what you mentioned about the conversation. That's, I think, the main point, that conversation should take place, because so often, literally, the conversation just doesn't take place. It's not even about did we hold the conversation in the right way. There's just no conversation. There's just everything's going on, and everyone is assuming he doesn't even want to talk to me. He has no time for me. You know, all he cares about now is, you know, he took an extra job in order that we should be able to pay for the extra expenses that we have now, and then he comes home and he's just running to the baby, or the opposite. All she cares about is the baby and having her friends over and that spending time with her family with the baby, and I feel so forgotten, and either of them could be having these feelings, and that's obviously just one example. And to have that conversation, make sure to have that conversation and to say, how are things for you? Or, again, like you mentioned, the courage of to say, I'm really feeling, I need help, I need your support, I need to reach out. And especially if the couple spent that time before the baby was born to say, either of us might need help after the baby's born. We might need more support from each other than we do now. Then when they ask for that help and they ask for that support once the baby's born, it will be much more natural and it won't seem like such a shock. Because actually for some couples, this is the main problem, that it's a shock. Wow, I thought everything was okay. I'm shocked. I thought, you know, it just seemed like you had it all together. I cannot believe what you're telling me now, that you're feeling overwhelmed. I literally could not believe it. And that's actually very, very common.
So sometimes what we see in conversations is that one person actually shares and becomes vulnerable and shares that they need and and the other one doesn't know how to respond. So I'm just following that train of thought, that sometimes if the response isn't what you were hoping for, kind of go with it. Like, just don't harp on the wrong response. Continue sharing the way you feel. Again, we're talking about healthy people. We're not talking about, you know, other kinds of situations. But just because you were, just because you were hoping for a type of response and you didn't get it, doesn't mean that your husband doesn't care about you or that your wife is only caring about the baby. You know, work through it and let them process what you said, and not necessarily are you going to get the response you wanted immediately.
That's an excellent point. And I think, you know, another very good point is that, you know, it's very common that when people, and especially for someone who's feeling very overwhelmed, and again, either one of the spouses, it's obviously most likely that it would be the woman, because she's the one who gave birth. And as you mentioned, she's the one probably who's taking most of the time taking care of the baby and waking up in the middle of the night. And, you know, the healing process, obviously the physical healing process, is something that she has to go through. But again, it could 100% be the husband, especially, for example, it's possible that the woman might be living very close to home and having all the support of her parents and her family, and he might be feeling very resentful that his family is being left out of it. So that might be something. But what could happen very often in a conversation like this is that if one of them is feeling overwhelmed, then there's just this downloading of and this and this and this and this. And since you know, they could start bringing up issues when you were 4 months pregnant already, you know, you were already a little bit out of touch and you were like in dreamland about this, or you were already focused on this, or you were already more focused on the baby coming than our relationship. And besides that, you're completely irresponsible with money. You're just spending money as if, you know, you're buying every single top quality thing for the baby and top. And there's this long laundry list. So, yes, definitely the best way to avoid getting that negative response from the spouse is to try to think of one thing, or possibly two, but really even the best thing is that one thing to say, you know, right now I'm just feeling so overwhelmed. The bathing, let's say, for some people, you know, bathing the baby and, you know, let's say, for example, it could be a very, very fearful experience. Some people are afraid to bathe a newborn baby in water, and that alone could be overwhelming. I can't deal with this. I can't deal with the stress of all the family members coming over, which happens obviously when there's a brand new baby, especially if it's a first child, and it might be the first grandchild to the grandparents. People are coming over nonstop. So pick that one thing that you want to focus on in that conversation. And then say, I have more things to talk about. Let's talk about it tomorrow. And express, thank you so much. This made me feel so good. You can't imagine how good it feels to be listened to. Say that to your spouse, because your spouse might say, whoa, you know, I don't understand what was so important about that conversation. And for the other spouse, that was like a lifesaver. It changed their whole outlook. It changed their whole or the main, what we mentioned earlier, the idea of state of mind, that all of a sudden, wow, he understands me or she understands me. So all of a sudden it feels easier and the state of mind is different.
So let's just talk a little bit. So those are some general conversations, but I'm imagining that when we talk and, you know, Gottman is known for his ratio. So could you talk a little bit about the ratio and especially why it's even more important at this point in the life cycle?
So excellent. This is Gottman's ratio. Again, what's great about Gottman's, all of his programs are that they're all based on research with thousands of couples. So everything we're talking about and what you see how much the research is reflective of reality when you speak to people and when you give these workshops and you meet people and the number of people who connect to it right away and people of different backgrounds and different ages and, you know, different cultures, people connect to it very, very strongly because this is the reality. So his statistics and his research are actually done very, very well. And what he found is what's very, very important is to recognize there is going to be conflict. So in any couple and at any time in a couple's life, the concept that a couple might encounter conflict in their relationship is very normal. So the question is not, will the couple encounter conflict? It's how will they deal with the conflict? And one of the most interesting bits of research that Gottman found was that 69%, which is really an astounding number, of issues that the couple will conflict about will never be resolved. So, and that's especially relevant when it comes to a baby because, for example, you know, let's say, you know, I often give this example of, you know, two spouses and one of them loves to go to the airport early and the other one can't stand the idea of spending one extra minute in the airport than they need to. And then all of a sudden they get married and they have to take that flight together. So the conflict might never be resolved, meaning one of them, obviously they're going to have to choose a time to go to the airport, but one of them might be thinking, okay, this is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know why I have to go 2 hours before, but okay, it makes her happy. So meaning not that the conflict's been resolved, but they learn to deal with the conflict. So it's still an issue of conflict because one member of the spouse is saying, okay, one member of the couple is still saying, this is ridiculous, but okay, fine, I'll deal with it. But when it comes to a baby, let's say, for example, raising the baby, So let's say one of them is tremendously woke up or grew up in a family where they're very, very strongly against pacifiers, let's say. Either the baby has a pacifier or the baby won't have a pacifier. So it's not really something that could be, you know, it's not really a compromise, an issue of compromise. Either the baby's going to have it or the baby won't. So that's something, for example, that could be one of their 69% issues. So it's not that 69% of things that the couple deal with. That's very important to remember. It's 69% of issues that relate to conflict. So it's not that the whole day, 69% of the time, they're never resolving their issues. So what's very, very important is that whenever the couple encounters anything to do with an issue that they're not able to resolve, and again, this is like a small example, but it might not be so silly, actually. For some people, let's say an issue like a pacifier could be a very important issue, but then obviously you have much bigger issues, you know, when it comes to chinuch and how they want to raise the baby. So these are things that if they might not agree upon, what really will define the nature of the couple's relationship and how much the relationship will be affected by those issues of conflict that can't be resolved is their ability to, even during those times when they discuss these high, high conflict issues, to have still a very high ratio of positive versus negative. So, for example, you can be talking about something that you really don't agree upon, but, you know, you could interject a compliment in the middle. You can use humor. You could smile. All of these things, these small little interactions that you're having with your spouse are actually effective in still retaining that's what you want, that even during the times of conflict, that the relationship doesn't feel toxic, that the relationship doesn't feel threatened. So what's very important to know is that during normal times, what you're looking at, strong couples have a 20-to-1 ratio of positive versus negative when they're not in conflict. You know, you spend an hour with this couple, you know, it's possible that something will break, or one of them, they'll be outside and that one of them forgot the bottle or forgot the blanket, and, I told you, I reminded you 10 times. So that's an example of a negative. But if that negative is balanced with 20 positive interactions, and it could be a smile, a joke, helping with the baby, that's actually also, that would be considered a positive interaction, helping with the baby, remembering, you know, that he or she remembers that their spouse really loves a certain kind of candy or chocolate or drink when they go shopping and they buy it and they bring it home. All of these little things are part of those 20 interactions that have to balance out the one negative interaction. Well, if a couple does that during a time of non-conflict, then when they have a time of conflict, and obviously every couple experiences those times of conflict, then they'll be able to retain a 5-to-1 ratio, meaning for every one negative, they'll have 5. But that's only if the couple during the time of non-conflict are having a ratio of 20-to-1, and that's very important, that it's much, much harder to, you know, while the couple's in conflict, it's very hard to hold that state of mind and remember to be sensitive and remember to keep those positive interactions going. But it will be natural for couples, and that's what's natural for those strong couples that we talk about, those one-third of couples. That's because during times of non-conflict, they're really working on those, that 20-to-1 ratio, and that's the number that you want to remember, the 20-to-1. Which would affect the 5-to-1 during the time of conflict.
So I'm assuming or understanding that it's the mindset that allows for the 20-to-1, and then when you're in conflict, you're still in that same mindset overall. It's like us against the problem, and it's really not about you, it's about the problem. And so we can still smile and laugh and just talk about the issue, and there may be some negatives seeping through because we have difference of perspectives, but it's really a mindset of strength of a couple.
Right. And what's so really specific about what the conflict that's related to a new baby is that these are new issues. And, you know, we're talking about issues that the couple never experienced before. You know, even if a couple, we're talking about a second baby or a third baby, they've never had two kids. They've never had three kids. They've never, you know, there's always, so the specific issues that come along, but especially when we're talking about a first baby, you're talking about issues that neither, you know, for her, it was a first birth. So obviously there's nothing in her life that could have prepared her for a first birth and everything that comes along with it and the healing process and feeding the baby and the doctor's appointments and all, there's so many things that could be so overwhelming, and then obviously the finances and, you know, the greater amount of laundry. You know, it's harder obviously to prepare a simple supper. What might have taken 10 minutes, you know, when the baby was not born yet, all of a sudden there's a baby screaming in the middle. So all of these things, and these are all high emotional issues. That's what's very unique about any type of conflict related to a baby. We're talking about issues related to money very often, which money is always a high emotional. It's way up there in the emotional issues that, you know, it's a big trigger basically for many people. And then also you're talking about the baby. And then the main thing, and I think that's something important to talk about, is that you're really talking about, you're going to start really exposing the differences in the culture and the background and the family, you know, the what you call the nuclear family, the family of origin that each one of the couple came from. So that's where you start seeing it the strongest. You know, when you're single, when you were engaged, when you were newly married, you know, it's kind of just the two of us, and it's easy to kind of, you know, we're doing our own thing. But then all of a sudden, there's more of, this is the way my mother did it, or this is the way my father did it, and I just expect things to be that way. So it's extremely important for the couple that each of them could really help the relationship by remembering that most probably any issue that they're dealing with or any emotion that they're feeling is something, it's a trigger for them. You know, so seeing the way their spouse talk to the baby or seeing the way their spouse doesn't talk to the baby either reminds them very much of home, or in a way that they want it to remind them of, or possibly in a way that they don't want them to remind them of. So that's important to remember, to try to take a step back and say, whoa, I know I'm being triggered. Maybe I should wait a few minutes before I bring up the issue. Maybe I could even talk to someone else before I raise the issue with my spouse. Maybe I can talk to my masia, maybe I can talk to a professional and to say, you know, am I even being realistic here? You know, before you start, or is there something more that I have to work on with? Then obviously you can still have the conversation with your spouse, but then it's a different kind of conversation. It's, you know, I want you to know that this and this is a trigger for me. That for you, for example, to come home late is constantly, and I'm, you know, that was one of my fears, that I would always be alone with the kids and that my husband wouldn't be there for me, for example. Or he might say, you know, for me to see you spending money, you know, and the way you're spending money, or for me to see you that you're spending, you went back to work too fast. You know, that was a big trigger for me. For me, I'm feeling, you know, and I understand your need to get out of the house and I respect it, but I want you to know that it's a trigger for me. That's an excellent conversation that a couple could have.
You mentioned the word expectations just before. Can you talk a little bit more about how expectations can be part of the stress?
So expectations are obviously based on our childhood. You know, there's so many things. These are literally things that we don't even think about. They're 100% part of our subconscious, and they're just the way things. We assume that that's the way it all, you know, because we were raised that way, we think that's the way it is in all homes. So, for example, a woman might have been raised in a home where her father always bathed the baby and her father always helped with diapering the babies and her father always did the shopping and put everything away in the fridge and things like that. And she made a few, obviously, I'm going to get married and he's going to do the same thing. And he might have assumptions, you know, the other way. He might, like we mentioned before, that my mother never went to work, you know, before the baby was at least 1 year old. Or my mother, you know, because she was staying home, my mother would stay home, so she would do all the shopping. Or my mother did go to work, but I never assumed that my wife would not go back to work after the baby, that this is it's a strain on the finances that I didn't expect. So that assumption of, and right away what's so toxic about an assumption is that it's right away associated with blame. Because when you assume something, right away you blame the other person for not living up to those expectations and not living up to your assumptions. So the first thing about assumptions is to recognize that that's exactly what they are. That everything you're thinking about and how a baby should be raised and how a baby shouldn't be raised and how a family should deal with finances and how a family should deal with going back to work after a baby and how a family should deal with having guests after a baby, all of these are assumptions based on our own family that we were raised in, and that it's important to recognize that we're now creating a new family. And obviously, we can take what we want from our family that we came from, and, you know, there are many, many beautiful things, but we have to realize we're married now to somebody else. And it's not about just recreating the exact family that we came from. It's about, you know, we married someone else, and they come from their own family, and they have their own expectations and their own assumptions. So as soon as we realize that we're dealing with expectations and assumptions, then we can have a conversation that sounds a lot more like, what's important for you? Why is it important for you? Would you feel very, very bad if you wouldn't do things that way? Wow, I didn't realize that you expected it to be like that. That's a very respectful, non-threatening conversation versus, wow, I cannot believe that, .. You know, any type of, when we say, I cannot believe, or anything, any type of generalization, obviously everyone knows that, things are such and such after a baby, that that's what you deal with finances, or everyone knows that you don't bring home guests for at least 5 months after a baby. And for, let's say, for the husband, it might not be everyone knows. Maybe for his mother, you know, that she was totally okay with having guests right after their baby. Maybe she had more help. Maybe he didn't realize that, or maybe she just managed to heal quicker after the birth, or whatever it is. But what's so important about assumptions and expectations is to, number one, recognize that they are that, so that the nature of the conversation is not about blame and not about, accusations, but about, let's understand each other. Let's take the time to hear what your expectations are, and you should know what my expectations are. Let's take the time to know what your triggers are, what your disappointments are, what were your dreams. You know, when you were younger and you thought about building your own family, what were your dreams? And, you know, maybe that you just assumed that everybody would have the same dream, but maybe not. And maybe your dreams changed. That's also something very important. For example, a woman might have thought, oh, for sure I want to go back to work after I have a baby. And then all of a sudden she has this baby and she says, no way, I don't want to work full time. I want to spend time with my baby. I never realized how important it would be for me. Or he might have said, you know, it was never important for me to spend more time learning. And now I realize that I do want to spend that extra time learning because I realize that I want to be a very good example for my child. And she might say, whoa, I didn't expect, you know, that little bit of extra time that you're taking to go have that chavrusa is like a sideball for me. I don't know how to heal. I thought that time would be that you would be taking the baby for me. So again, all of these conversations, number one, to recognize that there's an assumption and expectation. And I think that point is very important, not to hold it against the other person that they're expectations and their dreams might have changed. It's a very fair thing. You know, there's no contract. It's not like, okay, I signed a paper that I'm forever going to think like this. I'm allowed to change. I'm allowed to, but let's respect that process for each other. Let's have that conversation. Let's do it together. Let's be a team, and let's make it work.
Something else you said there about expectations and assumptions, people always talk about have a vision for your family. So what is the difference between a vision for your family and these expectations and assumptions?
So I think when you talk about a vision is something that would be shared. You know, that's something where the couple could say, you know, it's very, very important for us that our children know that they are our number one priority. So, for example, that we make a decision, there will be no phone, no computers, guests, let's say, no visitors between, let's say, 5 and 7. That that's family time, that's a vision together. We're going to spend that time. We're going to, you know, how our Shabbat table is going to look, the way we're going to spend time and interact with our kids in relation to their schooling, the way we're going to be an example for our kids in our relationship. So, for example, that we take the time to spend with each other, that as our children grow older, they can see, you know, that even though our parents are very, very busy, and we know that, you know, older children could know that finances might be tight, we know that our parents always make time for each other. So that, for example, that's a vision, a shared vision, versus an expectation is it was never shared. It never was spoken about to the other spouse. It was never became a shared vision, so it remains an expectation, and usually that expectation will be associated with a lot of resentment, a lot of blame, a lot of feelings of, you know, nobody appreciates me around here, things like that, because of never having that conversation about why that expectation is important. And it's possible. It's possible to hear from a spouse and the spouse say, I can't. It's not something I could live up to. I totally appreciate that that was your expectation and that was your dream, but it's not. I just, let's say, for example, you know, that a husband could say, I always dreamed of having a table with 10 guests every week, let's say. You know, or he might say, you know, I always dreamed of, you know, every year being able to buy so much clothing for my children, or I always dreamed, you know, that I would be able to be a full-time stay-at-home mother. And the couple might have that conversation and say, okay, it's I hear your expectation, I hear your dream, but it's not something I can't. If I try to live up to it, it's going to be very resentful. But then it's important to still recognize that the other spouse still has that expectation and to kind of be there to support the disappointment that might come along with it and to be sensitive to it. Say, you know, I know it's very hard for you. I know that you always wanted so many guests, and I know it's very hard for you that, you know, you have to go back to work after a few months, or I know it's very hard for you that, let's say, you know, for example, if you're talking about Shlichus, you know, that I know it's very hard for you that wanted this kind of shlichus, or that you thought that you would be able to do more, you know, even when you had kids, and now you realize that you can't. And or there's so many different things, but if you can be sensitive to it, then there's less of that painful feeling, and the couple could still have that strong sense of connection and a strong feeling of understanding, even though the sense of disappointment might never fully go away, which is okay. Someone could say, I always wish. It's a dream that I always had, and I accept that it's something that I'll never be able to have. But it's okay that the couple could have, and they could be aware of it. And as soon as we're aware, everyone has. Each one of the spouses will have those expectations and have those dreams that might not be fully realized. And the number one person to help and support the other spouse and to be there for them and to be sensitive about it and to recognize, obviously, that it might be a trigger in certain cases is the other spouse.
We said a lot here. Do you have any final thoughts, and then we'll go to a few questions that came in.
Yes. So what I definitely would like to talk about is that idea of the daily stress reducing conversation. And I think this would be a great thing to finish off with. And I would actually say if there's one thing that couples can take from the phone call, it would be this one thing. And I actually, you know, Gottman calls it the daily stress reducing conversation. I think in a firm lifestyle, it would be very, very difficult to have that daily conversation, you know, because you have Mincha, Ma'ariv, and, you know, it's just there's so many other things happening that not necessarily it would be a daily conversation. I would even say twice a week. If a couple's having this conversation twice a week, they would be doing very well. And the basis of this conversation is the recognition that most stresses that a couple deals with actually have nothing to do with the relationship. And what's interesting is that people bring home those stresses, and then who do they take it out on? Obviously, their spouse. And one thing that I would really like to emphasize is that in most cases, the way people deal and speak to their spouse, eventually, in most cases, they speak the same way to their children. So, for example, if you learn to blame and we learn to, you know, be short-tempered with our spouse, then most likely that will be the way we end up speaking to our child. And the opposite, if we learn to be sensitive and respectful and, you know, take the time to calm ourselves down before we speak to our spouse and things like that, then that's probably also the way we'll eventually speak to our kids. So what the daily stress-reducing conversation is that each spouse would take 5 minutes, 10 minutes to share their stresses of the day that have nothing to do with the other spouse. So not like, I was relying on you, you know, it's hard for me that you're not helping enough with the diapers. It's hard. That's not what we're talking about in the daily stress-reducing conversation. We're talking about the annoying guy at work who's impossible and who's, you know, slacking off, and because of that, I have to carry more of the burden. Or, you know, the very difficult neighbor who's being so unfair about the parking and constantly blocking me off and making me late to work. Or at the doctor's office, the secretary was being so impossible, and, you know, I really needed that appointment, and she didn't even want to hear what I had to say. Whatever it is, there's so many different things that happen in a couple's life and all of these daily stresses, and when the other spouse just listens, and more than listens, what the daily stress-reducing conversation is, it's that feeling of, I'm on your team. I'm on your side. So you might not even agree. So let's say, for example, the person might say, oh, my boss yelled at me again today because I was late. So maybe the person was late and they kind of deserve to be told off by their spouse. Well, guess what? By their boss, I'm sorry. Then guess what? They don't want to hear it from their spouse. They didn't come home and tell their spouse, oh, by the way, my boss yelled at me today again because I was late. And the spouse says, well, you know, leave the house 10 minutes earlier and you won't be late. No. The reason they told you is because they would like a sympathetic ear. So you might not want to say something like, yeah, you're totally right. So he had no right to yell at you, because that might not be true. But you can say something like, oh, I hate when that happens. You were probably so tired and, you know, I hate when the boss, I would hate to be yelled at by my boss in front of everyone. Or, oh, I would also feel so stressed. So, which is true. Even if you were wrong, you would still feel stressed. You would still feel bad about being yelled at. So that's the idea of the stress-reducing conversation, that each one, and it's such a good feeling to be able to know, to come home, wow, I could come home, and I'll just have, there's someone there to listen to me. There's someone there on my side. And that sense of connection and that sense of understanding, that's what we were talking about before, that 20-to-1 ratio. So it's not only about the 20-to-1 ratio, it's all of these little things that the couple does to strengthen their relationship when it's not a time of conflict, so that when the times of conflict do come up, you're talking about very, very solid ground that the couple has to stand on to be able to deal with those issues of conflict without it defining their marriage. The idea is, what defines the marriage? The strong relationship, and not the moments of conflict.
Well, so that's the next way to end up the stress-reducing conversation. Thank you, Freda. We have a few questions I'm hoping that you can address.
Yes.
So before we had the baby, we had conversations, but we missed so many important topics we see now. Is there a checklist for things that we should talk about before?
So that's a very interesting question, and I think, you know, from experience, both of talking with couples and actually also a lot of singles, in many cases it's actually interesting that a checklist could actually be very damaging. And, you know, a great example that I have of that, I remember I once went to a workshop by a marriage therapist, and she was speaking to, it was a group of only women, and she mentioned, she said, you know, everybody could hand in questions, and the questions were given out on cards, and the questions were basically read anonymously. And but she said, there are certain questions that I'll choose not to read out loud. And she said the reason is because sometimes, you know, when a couple could think that everything is okay with them and they never even think of, you know, oh, we don't have that, and why don't we ever do that, or, you know, why, oh, is that what all couples are doing and we're missing out, and we're the, you know, like, let's say, for example, a couple will ask a question like, should we talk about our yearly vacation? And for another couple, it's just not a given. And then all of a sudden, one of them could say, hey, are you telling me that all couples go on yearly vacations and we're not? So that could be the issue of a checklist, that you can create issues when there are non-issues. And, for example, you know, another couple might have that yearly vacation, but they might not have these amazing daily conversations or daily walks or even weekly walks that this couple is having. So, and if that couple is, you know, it's obviously important for every couple to take time for themselves and to make the time for each other as a couple, but not necessarily it has to be a yearly vacation. So that's an example of where the checklist could be damaging, when it might result in couples comparing themselves, and again, that idea of expectations to say, oh, wow, I didn't even think of, you know, that's what all couples do, and maybe we're missing out on that. On the other hand, you know, there are certain things that a couple could, and that's why I think actually it's not necessarily such a good idea to speak to friends who are of the same age group who say, oh, you know, you better speak to your husband about, you know, bathing the kids or this. And, you know, for another spouse, let's say, for example, there might be one couple that the husband doesn't help at all with bathing or with diapering, but he'll do all the cooking, you know, or he works much longer hours so that she doesn't have to go to work. And maybe another couple might have the husband, you know, he helps a lot more at home, but he doesn't work such long hours. And because, you know, maybe that's just the way it is, and that's what he was able to find. And because of that, she has to go to work. And many times people don't realize that when they're talking to each other, you know. So I think what could be very helpful, what you mentioned about a checklist, is, yes, to speak to someone older. I would say someone more experienced who might say, you know, you could say, do you think there's something that I could prepare myself before I give birth or before my wife gives birth that could help me to be more sensitive and more better prepared for, you know, the upcoming changes. And actually, I think now would actually be, in this question, a very good time to bring up the point. I think it's an excellent, excellent idea for a couple to meet with a financial advisor or a financial coach before they have a baby, or, you know, in the time, obviously, it's obviously better before they have the baby. There's just easier to get out of the house, because so many of the issues that couples have related to a new baby are actually finances. And when it comes from a financial coach, that, for example, the couple could sit and they can talk about, you know, their dreams for saving money and how they want to spend money, and they make that agreement with the financial coach and they have it down on paper, all of a sudden it's a lot, you know, it's not an issue of conflict anymore. And the financial advisor might bring up a lot of points that they themselves did not even think about, you know. And the same thing, you know, for example, with the birth, you know, maybe speak to the doula
and the doula, you know, could say, you know, what's your expectations? How do you want to spend more time at home? And all of these things, to think about those areas and to get help, to tap into the resources that are out there. And sometimes it might cost a couple, $100, $150 in certain cases, you know, let's say in the case of a doula, maybe $500 to have that resource, but it could end up really saving the relationship.
I would also add to that that you're always going to have conversations and there's always going to be things that pop up. So be used to not being overly prepared and overly planned. It's okay.
100%. And the idea that I'm still, you know, okay. And the ability to say, I think one of the strongest statements that a couple could say to each other is to say, I'm feeling very hurt right now. I'm feeling very overwhelmed. I don't know how to respond to this. Let's talk about it tomorrow. You know, like acknowledging that this is a point of contention, acknowledging that it's an issue, and saying, I value our relationship more than the point that I'm trying to bring across. So let's not, and even to say that, to say, you know, I value our relationship more than this issue that we're fighting about, or that we're, not to use the word fighting, that we're having a conflict about. So let's talk about it tomorrow, or let's speak to a financial advisor if it's about money. Let's speak to someone that we both respect, you know, a mashpia or a rav if it's something to do with chinuch. Let's speak to, you know, a respected medical, you know, if they're arguing about something that's medical related. So that would be a very, very good point, to be able to say, okay, it's a very difficult issue, but that doesn't mean this is not what defines our relationship. We're not that cup, you know, we're not in conflict. That's not who we are. We are a strong, united couple, and this is an issue that we can agree on.
Okay, this one is, this next question is big, and let's see if we can tackle it a little bit. My spouse's parents, okay, I'm guessing it's the husband's parents. The husband's parents come over too often and give too much advice. My husband doesn't understand why I'm getting overwhelmed.
So this is actually one of the big, this is something you hear all the time from young couples, and that's the, you know, somehow people, it's interesting, people respect the young couple's privacy when they're alone, when there's only the two of them. You know, there's kind of that unspoken rule, don't just pop into a young couple's house and don't just knock on the door, you know, hi, I just want to say hi. But all of a sudden there's that new adorable baby, and again, like, it's possible it might be the first grandchild or the only grandchild that lives, you know, within walking or driving distance, that, oh, I'm just going to pop in Shabbos, I'm just going to pop in after work, I'm just going to... So that's actually something that could be a huge issue, and it's definitely something that the couple should agree upon. And if they're having a very, very difficult time agreeing upon, and in many cases it might be, then they definitely should seek professional help. I would say that this is an issue, and, you know, I've spoken to couples where this is a very, very strong issue where they just can't see eye to eye, where he'll tell her something, you're totally being unreasonable. It's my parents' first grandchild. They have a right to come over after work and see the baby. And she might be saying, no way, I'm feeling so tired. I don't want to have that stress that, you know, that I have to worry about how the house looks or how I look or the baby sleeping. I have to make sure to keep the baby up, you know, so that they could see them. So if they're able to have that conversation and to make agreed upon, and that's obviously the best case scenario, that's how it should be, that they're able to say, okay, it's reasonable that obviously the family members want to see the baby. Let's make an agreement. These are the times, these are the days when it's easy for us and it's not overwhelming for us to be able to host family. And it might even be the opposite, that they might say, you know, she might say, it's way too overwhelming when everyone comes over. I have no problem going over there two or three times a week, or, you know, or sleeping over, whatever it is. If they're able to have that agreement, that's amazing. But if they're not, and what what's so important and why I emphasize, you know, the importance of possibly seeking professional help is because it's, for some people, a huge, huge trigger. It's a huge, and it could become a source of tremendous, tremendous argument and conflict of, you don't understand my family and you only care about your family and all of those kind of things. So, and really what you're talking about, you know, what we therapists refer to this, it's called enmeshment. You know, when a couple is or a person is so still strongly enmeshed with their original family that they're not able to go on and do what's right for the new family that they're building and to respect the needs and what's right for their new family. So if it's such a case, and the earlier the better, because it could definitely become a huge, huge issue.
And I would just add to that that if you're finding that your spouse is not listening and doesn't want to go to therapy, you can go to therapy yourself or to speak to a counselor yourself to get some insight about how to deal with it and how you might bring it up to your spouse in a different way than you were bringing up till now.
That's a very good point. But what's very important is, and why some, let's say, for example, there are some therapists that might not agree to see only one spouse in such a case, because what could happen is that one person with therapy comes to a point of insight and understanding where they say, this is totally a not healthy situation. And it's not healthy. And I was right that, you know, this idea of the family being able to come over whenever they want and however they want and stay how long they want is not healthy. And that the fact that my spouse is completely not able to see it shows how enmeshed he is. And they go on and on and on. So it can end up being very, very difficult for the couple to deal with one of them progressing in their state of understanding and their state of mind in dealing with that family and the other one completely lagging behind. Because let's say, for example, in this case where one spouse thinks that the other one is completely unreasonable for not allowing the family to come over whenever they want to see the baby, and the other one is feeling completely resentful, like, you know, it's not just about the baby. I'm also a person. I deserve my privacy. I deserve, you know, to... Or it's not even just about my privacy. I want to set up a schedule for the baby, and I can't have this. People just coming over whenever they want, whatever it is. Then if that one person is just not able to see a different way, and the other person, meanwhile, went to therapy and is seeing the different way, and they're not managing to get through to the other person, then it could be extremely, it really could be a start of an issue that could dominate. That's the word I would use. It would absolutely dominate the relationship and dominate all of their interactions. It would dominate the way they spend their time on Shabbos. Oh, you always spend time here and you don't spend enough time there and you don't here and you don't this. And for vacations, we always go there and we spend enough time. It's really something that the couple has to, if they're not able to come to an agreement on their own, which is hopefully what's able to happen, that they're able to have that conversation where they understand each other, 100% I would highly emphasize in this case if they could possibly go to therapy together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so other questions did come in, and maybe we can respond to those privately. But at this point, I think we have to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Freda, for so much insight about this. Preparing your marriage for the baby, there's quite a bit to think about beyond the high chairs and car seats and baby bottles. And I think that you gave us enough to think about. So thank you very much, Freda.
Thank you very much, Devorah, for your amazing organization. And it was really an honor to take part of this phone call.
All right. Thank you and good night. Good night, everyone.